From our studios in Cuenca, Spain, I'm Kate Jetmore with Listen, the podcast that highlights the common threads that run through different cultures and unite us as human beings. Following a much-needed break after our first four seasons, we are thrilled to be back with our first post-hiatus season, a bundle of interviews focusing on adventure. Who are the people who strike out on incredible journeys? Could it be that you have it in you to do something similar? What can these adventurers teach us about how embarking on a trip such as theirs can benefit us in our daily lives? Whether or not adventure is calling to you personally, sit back and enjoy these stories of challenges taken and challenges met. My guests today are Aits Remelk and Katlin Jurisaar. Natives of Estonia, they cycled across Europe and back again in 2016 and 2017, beginning and ending their trip on their front porch. Aits is now in his final semester of a BA in geography and previously studied woodworking, while Katlin has a master's in communications management. They work at the same high school, Aits as a geography teacher and Katlin as a project manager. Welcome, Katlin and Aits. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Yes.
It's great to have you here. First of all, I want to say we are recording this conversation in late March 2020, right at the height of the coronavirus outbreak. So I just have to ask, are you and your family taking precautions and staying safe?
Well, for us, Katlin and I and my brother, we are staying quite safe, I would say. We are staying in our small log cabin in southern Estonia in the middle of forests, and we have quite a nice supply of food, so I think we'll be good for an extended period of time here.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear that. What about your parents? You said your brother's with you. What about your parents? Are they staying safe as well?
Yeah, my parents are living in another house in the middle of forest in another part of Estonia. So I think they should be okay too. They are, they like to be sort of isolated, you know.
Good, good. So there are no big changes for them. And it sounds like in Estonia you have plenty of forests for everyone. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. I hope it's going to stay that way. Let's see.
Now, Aits, speaking of your parents and especially your dad, I think he was the one who first introduced you to cycling and bicycle touring.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Actually, when we were just little kids, my brother and I, our dad sort of forced us to go on a small cycling tour every summer, just maybe a couple of days, like 50 kilometers a day or something like this. And of course we didn't really like it that much at first, but it started to grow on me at least. And when I got older, like 18 or 19, then I went on my first solo trip on a bike, and yeah, it's just started from there, sort of.
I really like hearing that because, you know, I have a son who's probably about the same age you were when you were taking these trips with your dad, and it's a struggle, you know, to learn how to like hard work, you know, to learn how to find joy in really, you know, making an effort and pushing yourself. So that's inspiring for me as a mom to know that, you know, there's a happy ending to that, at least in your case. And Katlin, how did you come into the picture? I think the two of you were already a couple when you decided to take this big trip, right?
Yes, we were a couple for 4 years. Yes, 4 years.
Yeah, maybe something like this.
And I had all always said to Edge that I would like to go to and have this kind of trip, and we were talking about it, but we never had a chance because I worked in Finland during the summers and we couldn't see each other. But yeah, one day I had this opportunity.
And did you have any experience on a bike?
No. And on a bike, yes, I cycle like a normal people do, but on a heavy bike, no. No, it was my first
trip. Okay, so you didn't have any experience carrying all that weight on your own bike and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like the absolutely first time for her. And she started on such a long trip.
Wow, that's incredible. Did you know for sure, Katlin? I mean, did you have any doubts about saying yes?
Actually, no. We were thinking what to do after our studies, and I felt that I had put so much energy into it, and I want to have something different in my life, and I thought that going to Europe would be nice, but at first, I didn't think that cycling is the way how we go and explore Europe. But one day,
she just kept going on about how, it would be nice to go to Europe, but there wasn't any real plan, And I was like, what are we going to do there? And what's the, the bigger point of why we go there? And then it sort of clicked that maybe we should go on a bicycle. So I presented the idea to Katlin, and she agreed pretty much instantly. And we shook hands on it and started.
it was a deal. Wow. So interesting. So the kind of idea for going to Europe was yours, Katlin. And then Aitz, you found some structure that you felt comfortable with, and you both agreed to it. Were either of you nervous about how taking such an intense trip and being together day and night, eating every meal together, taking every mile together, every kilometer together, were you nervous about how that might affect your relationship?
Yeah, of course we were worried because both of us had read about a little bit about these kind of things, and basically it seemed like this is the, make it or break it kind of situation. Either you are going to do really well out there and you will grow even closer together, or you find out that you don't get along, and then you probably don't match with the other person as a couple, so it is probably not going to work out.
Yeah, but we were thinking that what happens, it happens, and it's the best way anyway. So let's take a chance and enjoy, and let's see what's happened.
Yeah, because it's a sort of a nice shortcut to find out if this thing between us is going to work out or not.
It's like the ultimate test, right?
Yeah, you could say that.
Wow. I mean, literally, people use that phrase a lot. The ultimate, the most intense. But in your case, it actually was the ultimate test. So, you are about to embark on the trip of a lifetime. What did you feel? What were you feeling? Did you feel excited? Did you feel scared? Were you confident? Were you sure of how it would all work out? Tell us a little bit about how you felt, kind of the night before.
The night before, or maybe even months before, I suppose, were like, first, maybe a couple months before, it was like, it's really exciting, I'm really looking forward to it. But the closer the moment of departure came, the more I started to feel anxious. I didn't feel confident at all. I had been on cycling trips before many times. I know what to do, how things work, but never something this huge, So, yeah, I was really nervous and, kind of scared too, because you don't really know what's coming, and of course, I wasn't sure even if we are going to make it to Portugal, because that was the goal, to get there. I really wasn't sure we were going to get there at all. Just try, see what's coming. And yeah, was a little bit scared to fail as well, but yeah, push through it.
But actually, I didn't feel this kind of feelings coming from you. But I know we discussed these things and it was quite nervous for to us. But for me, it was scary. Oh my God, how scary, because I was scared of bears, how people are, maybe they are mad if we are staying on the land or something, and what's gonna happen, do you have a place to sleep, is there enough clear water and everything, like what we're gonna do if something goes not so well, and it was quite scary to leave everything and go away and be a part of it, what's normal in our everyday life. But it was so exciting also.
Yeah.
What about language? I mean, both of you speak English really well. Do you speak any other languages, or were you worried that you wouldn't be able to communicate with people who lived outside your country?
Well, we didn't really have any other languages that we could use. I mean,
we have a little bit Russian.
Yeah, we both speak a little bit Russian, so it was sort of helpful when we were in Latvia. But this knowledge of Russian is really, really basic, so it didn't help that much. And just before the trip, I'd been living in Italy for like 6 weeks, I think. So I picked up a little bit of Italian, and that also helped out just a bit. It was nice. But in general, yeah, the main language was English. And to be honest, that was the last thing we were worried about.
And the most most important one was body language.
Yeah, body language. So, yeah. That always helps you out, yeah.
Oh, yes, the magic of hand gestures. And the magic of a smile. You can really get a lot of help if you just smile at people.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, it is.
Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back to hear all about what the trip was like. We'll be back in a second.
Listen is sponsored by RAF, cutting-edge cuisine in a traditional setting. For a look at the RAF dining experience, visit www.rafsanpedro.es. That's www.rafsanpedro.es.
This is Kate Jetmore with Listen. If you're just joining us, our guests are Katlin Jurisaar and Aitz Remelk, here to tell us all about biking across Europe. So, the trip itself. Can you give us an overview before we get into the details? Just, if you could, maybe just list the countries you traveled through and give us an idea of how many kilometers you covered.
Okay, so basically, of course, we started from Estonia. We visited about 15 or 16 countries, I think. So Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Czech Republic, Austria, Italy, Monaco, France, Spain, Portugal, then...
Spain again,
yeah. The ferry ride to Italy, across Italy to...
Albania.
Eastern coast, and then yeah, across the sea again to Albania, and then Montenegro,
Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Bosnia, yeah, and Serbia, Hungary, and then Poland
Slovakia.
Again. Ah, Slovakia, yeah. Slovakia, Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, and back to Estonia.
Wow, I don't think I realized that your return trip was a different route. So you hit so many different countries. I guess it's so ridiculous, but I guess in my mind, I was just imagining that, you know, it was like the same road that you just rode back on the same road. It's so ridiculous. So honestly, you took a completely different route. Why was that? Just to provide some variety and see some different countries?
Of course, honestly. For me, you know, I have sort of like a adventurous spirit. Even if I, you know, I go somewhere, I take the wrong way, I don't want to go back the exact same way I came. Even if it's just like 1 or 2 kilometers, I try to find another place to go so I see some new stuff. And that's basically mm-hmm. the same thing with going back.
Well, I think we already touched on this before, but I just want to ask you directly, were each of you sure from the moment the trip began, were you sure that you would be able to do what you had set out to do, to bike from your doorstep to the Atlantic Ocean and home again?
Oh, no, I wasn't sure at all.
No, in a word, no.
Yeah, no.
I think this is a really important message because, you know, when you hear about someone who's done something incredible, and what you guys did was incredible, when you hear about this kind of thing, like, you know, I raced in the Iditarod with my sled dogs, or, you know, I scuba dived through the biggest underwater cave system in the world, this sort of thing. You just assume that these people they're stronger than you. They're better than you. They have no fear, you know? But sometimes, I mean, probably always, people who take these kinds of trips are people just like you and me who are nervous and not sure that they're going to make it to the end. So I think that's an important message to communicate. I do want to take a moment and communicate to our listeners how we met. So I'm just going to fast forward in your trip. You've reached the Portuguese coast. You've turned eastward again, and you're near Cuenca, the town where I live in Spain. And Aitz, you had a problem with your bike, which you ended up going to my husband Rodrigo's bike shop for help. So why don't you continue the story from there?
Yeah, basically, I had bike trouble once again. It was a major issue throughout the trip. So yeah, I was kind of mad that
again.
Yeah, we have to, you know, start the repairs. And we weren't actually planning to go to Cuenca at all, but it was the nearest bigger town. So we decided to try our luck and cycle there. And we went in. Rodrigo and his assistant.
We're in the Todo Pichi yeah. bicycle shop. I still remember the sign yeah. and the bright red color. It was so beautiful.
Yeah, and all the sunshine. And, you know, it's a really nice day. And we just gave my bike away and chilled around the town. And it took a bit longer than we expected. It was starting to get dark when we got my bike back. So I asked Rodrigo if he knows any, you know, good spots where we could set up our camp for the night near the town. And he just invited us to stay with him. And we had already learned by this point that if someone, you know, asks you to go to their house or go do something with them, you say yes, because that's a really, really nice adventure and a nice chance to meet some great people.
Well, it was really special for us too, for all three of us, to have you in our home. And you ended up staying several days. I think you maybe stayed 3 days and three nights, or 3 nights and 4 days, something like that. But we loved having you in our home. It was really special. I'm assuming that you had other encounters like that. I mean, you were on the road for, what, 6 months? Is that how long the trip was?
8 months, almost 8 months.
Yeah, it was near 8 months, okay. Actually, more like
okay,
this.
So I think it was like September to June, something like that, September to May?
September to May, yeah.
Okay, so tell us about some of those other special moments from your trip, the moments that have really stuck with you, whether that is, you know, being invited to other people's homes or, you know, just moments on the road. Let us know about some other moments like that.
Well, the first most memorable moment of meeting someone was also related to my bike breaking.
So are you saying that one of the secrets to a great trip is to take a bike that breaks down all the time?
Yeah, pretty much, because or just, you know, I don't know, be the kind of person that needs help with something. So you can meet a lot of people. But yeah, my bike basically a spoke broke on my rear wheel again. So not again, it was the first time of many, many, many to come. So I had to go find the bike shop. So we cycled to Rezekne in Latvia. It was maybe just a couple days into a trip, and we cycled to Rezekne and tried to find a bike shop that could take care of the problem. And we were just looking around, and some guy cycled up to us, asked if we needed any help, and that was how we met Boris, or Borja, how he likes to be called. And he really helped us out a lot, because we were in Eastern Latvia, that is mainly Russian-speaking region, and we don't really speak Russian well, so he helped us out a lot and invited us to stay at his property. And we also stayed here for, I think, like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, we celebrated his birthday.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And I think you also told us about staying with a family in Albania. Was that right? A family, you mentioned that also a man who approached you on your bikes and invited you to come to their home.
Yes, in Albania. Yeah, we were just cycling out of Tirana, and we were in some small town near Tirana, which is the capital of Albania. And some man came up to us, and he seemed really friendly, and invited us to stay with him. And of course, we had to agree. We went we went with him, and once again stayed for a couple days, like 2 or 3 days again, and learned about life in Albania. They showed us around, and they were really, really, really hospitable and really kind and generous people, even though, you know, they weren't so well off. And one of the kind of silly or memorable things from that family, they really weren't well off, but when we were starting to cycle away from them, when we left their place, then the guy tried to give us money, because he said, "I'm so sorry that I couldn't take the cafe. Here's some money for you so you can go to cafe." And I was like, "What are you doing, man?"
Oh my goodness, wow.
I mean,
wow,
just
gave
this
amazing
money to his son, yes.
Yeah.
So here they had invited you to stay in their home for, how long were you there? A couple of days?
3 days, I think.
2 or 3 days, yeah, something like this.
Mm-hmm. And made food for you and given you a place to sleep. And then even at the end, he felt like that wasn't enough and he had to offer you more.
Yeah,
wow.
It was, oh my God.
Yeah, it was a really
unbelievable, yeah,
incredible experience, yeah. Seriously.
Tell us about some other moments on your trip that stand out for you.
Well, one of the moments that I really cherish is when Kathleen started to feel sick when we were in Czech Republic. So we called it a day pretty early, maybe around like 1 p.m. or something like that. We found a nice camping spot, set up our tent, and started reading a book. So
mm-hmm. Reading it like out loud to each other?
No, we just opened it and I held it open and we just read together and turned pages together, and it was just a really, really great time. Just the whole time we were there, we were reading and we finished the book together. That was
so you great. weren't reading it out loud, you were each reading silently, but the same book at the same time?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Mm.
And talking about interesting moments.
Yeah, discussing the interesting things going on there. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Were there moments on the trail when you sort of reached a landmark? Like the most obvious example would be when you actually got to the ocean, or when you'd gone a certain number of kilometers. Did you do anything special to kind of mark that moment?
Yeah, one of the most special celebrations was when we hit 5,000 kilometers on our odometers. That was in Spain, somewhere in the more desert region, I guess. It was really dry all over, everywhere. And so we hit 5,000. We went to a shop, bought a really cheap bottle of champagne and... and a bag of tortilla chips and went to some deserted piece of land in the middle of the desert, opened a champagne bottle and just drank champagne and ate tortilla chips, and it was just the best time.
We had a quite nice view. It was like a little hill, and there was a dog who were barking, and it was so nice.
Yeah, it was just so amazing.
It is amazing when you're, I mean, I obviously haven't taken the trip that we're talking about, but I have been, you know, on long hiking trips or, you know, you're out in nature and sort of away from the creature comforts that you know, that we've all come to sort of expect in Western society. But when you're out in nature, it's like the most simple thing just feels so beautiful and tastes so delicious, you know, just like cold water, you know, or in your case, you know, a tortilla chip in the middle of the desert. I love it. What about, you know, we're looking at kind of the happy times. What about the times that weren't so happy? I'm assuming, you know, what were the hard days like? Did you ever feel scared? Did you ever feel sad?
Well, there was one time I specifically remember was in Austria when we were in Salzburg, I think, and we were trying to find a place on, I think, was it Couchsurfing?
Yes.
Yeah, we were trying to find someone on Couchsurfing that would host us for the night, you know, so we could stay there, maybe take a shower or something. And we spent several hours sending out messages, but nobody would take us so on such short notice. So, we said, okay, whatever. We went to the store, bought some gummy bears and a really, you know, not so great bottle of wine, and went to our tent, set up a tent in some little forest. So just ate some gummy bears and drank wine and tried to, you know, enjoy ourselves, make the best out of this kind of bad situation.
Even though it was so cold during the night, like minus 6 degrees, and
and
you know that, oh, I would like to have some warm shower because you didn't have the chance to wash yourself very often, and it was like, oh, I miss so much these little normal life things.
And maybe one of the main things was that we would have really liked to enjoy an environment that is warm. You know, we had been outside in mostly minus degrees for several weeks. Mm. And the only heat we get is that our body generates. But and this sort of a weird feeling when you don't feel anything warm around you. So we would have just liked to enjoy this.
Yeah. Wasn't it also in Austria, I think I remember you telling me about, I mean, I don't mean to focus all the hard moments on Austria, poor Austria, but I think you told me about a morning when you woke up in Austria and it was snowing and you were so excited, oh, it's beautiful, it's snowing, and you hopped on your bikes. Do you want to tell that story?
Oh, yeah, we have to tell it.
Yeah.
I'm going to start.
Yeah, please.
It was, we knew that we have to go into the Alps and have some mountain time. And we got there, we were quite high. How high we were?
I think it was like 1600 meters, something like this. 16 mm-hmm. or 1700 meters.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And in the morning we woke up, it was like, oh, it's Christmas time, like snowing and everything. I love snow. And it was like, oh yeah, we are in a happy place. Let's start riding again. So mm-hmm. after that, at first it was very funny because people were taking pictures of us because it was snowing a lot after some point, and we enjoyed it. But you can continue with this hard part.
Yeah. For the most part, at first at least, it was really, you know, fun, nice, people taking photos and videos of us cycling in the snow. And it wasn't too bad for us either, because we had nice jackets and nice trousers, but we didn't have waterproof gloves or boots. So our hands and feet started getting wet from the snow. It was sort of like wet snow. And eventually they got so cold that, we couldn't hold on to the brakes anymore. And the problem was that we were going...
And were you going downhill?
Yeah, we were going downhill all of the time. It was maybe like 30 or 40 kilometers of going downhill. So it took several hours, and otherwise, if we could have gone uphill, it would have been a lot better, because, you know, you cycle, you have to work, but we were just sitting on our bikes, couldn't do anything, just holding down brakes, so the speed wouldn't grow too much. And when we were on the near the end of the road, almost getting down to the valley on the switchback road, then it was the worst. We had been out there for like a couple hours already, and it had come to a point where we really couldn't hold on to our brakes anymore. We had to stop every like 100 meters or so, take a break, warm up our hands, and
every 100 meters.
Yeah, it was really bad, honestly.
You even thought that you're not gonna make it, because if you are not able to hold on brakes, you're gonna crash, and
And your bikes were so heavy too.
Yes.
Yeah. It was it was either hold down your brakes or just go straight down the mountain.
Oh my god. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm. Let's get out of the tough moments. How about that? Also, it's interesting because I think it really speaks so clearly to your personalities that when I ask you to tell stories about, like, let's talk about the hard times. When did you feel scared? When did you feel sad? It's like there's always this kind of, you know, glimmer of, oh, but it was exciting and it turned out well, and at the beginning it was beautiful, you know. You know, we were talking about a couple minutes ago, we were talking about how, you know, food tastes better out in nature and sunsets look more beautiful when you're, you know, out on your bike. But what about time? Did your experience of time change at all? Was it different when you were out on the road?
Oh my god, yes. It was like you have a chance to live two lives together. Like, the time doubled.
Yeah, it's sort of like a strange concept, I would say, because if you're out there, you know, living this sort of adventurous life, every day you wake up, okay, you're in your tent, that's like a home away from home, your tent. You wake up in your tent, you're at home, wherever you put up your tent, you wake up and you don't know where you end up during the day or where you are going to sleep the next night. Maybe you will sleep in a forest somewhere, maybe you just have to sleep
on the promenade.
Yeah, sleep on the promenade or on the street somewhere, or maybe somebody invites you in.
Mm-hmm.
So, and all the things you see during your your regular day of bicycle touring, it all adds up to the point where you feel like that 1 month is like 1 year, or 1 week is like 1 month. You just get so many different experiences in a short amount of time. So it feels like calendar moves at the same pace as usual, but for you it's like, it feels like several lifetimes.
Wow. Well, let's take another short break and we'll be right back to continue our conversation with Katlin Jurisaar and Aitz Remmelk. We love your feedback. Let us know which episodes you're enjoying most and what you hope to hear in the future. Subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already. Rate, review, and share, and be sure to recommend us to your friends and colleagues. You can find us on social media and check out the new Listen blog on our website at thelistenpodcast.com. We're talking today with Aitz Remmelk and Katlin Jurisaar about their epic bike trip across Europe. So I have to ask, did you make it home? And what was that like? The moment when you arrived, I'd love to hear how it felt when you got back home.
It was at first, the first day was really amazing. It was a great feeling to come back to Estonia, to go to this small local shop and talk to the shopkeeper or worker in Estonian. That was such a great feeling to hear Estonian language from another person again, and arriving here at our doorstep, it was just an amazing feeling and sort of like a feeling of accomplishment as well, that we had finished our 11,000 kilometers and we are now back home. So yeah, I felt pretty great. It was really nice.
Yeah, it was true. It was amazing, and the sun was shining. I remember it like, oh, we are taking you back here, and you're also welcome to be here. But I remember it was so funny to be at store because we were used to commentate what we are buying and what others have in their this grocery cart and everything. It was like, maybe it's quite a good thing. Maybe we should buy it too. And now you can't do it because it's not normal.
Because when you were on the road, Estonian was like your secret language, right? And no one could understand you.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Did you make any mistakes with that, or were you careful with not using it once you got home?
Well, yeah, I don't think we made any mistakes with that. We got used to it quite quickly, and even if we did make any mistakes, it would have been just, you know, we would have gotten some weird looks. we didn't say like anything bad about people or something like that, just you know, maybe sometimes making some weird comments like
oh, he will buy apples, we would like to have them too.
Yeah. Or something. Something along these lines, yeah.
What about, well, you're already kind of talking about this, but sort of in general, in the days and the weeks after you got back, how did that feel? I mean, as compared to being on the road, and was it easy to slip back into your normal routine?
Well, first days were nice, of course, but as a couple of days had passed, we found ourselves talking with Katlin that, you know, we have a little bit money left, maybe we should go on a small tour in Estonia for a couple of weeks, you know, instead of just staying here at home. And it was kind of a bittersweet moment, you know. It was nice to be at home, but at the same time we would have loved to keep cycling still. And yeah, it was a bit hard to adjust to this so-called regular life again.
So you missed it after you got home. You liked being home, but you missed being on the road.
Yeah, and even towards the end of our trip, I felt like, you know, that in a couple of weeks you're going to get home, but sometimes it made me feel a little bit sad that it's going to be all over, but in another way it was really good because I enjoyed it even more because of this feeling.
What about what was it like to tell people about your trip? Were people excited to hear about it? Did you inspire them? Did other people say, "Oh, I'm going to do that next year"? Or what was that like, talking to people about your trip?
Well, honestly, it felt kind of weird because for us it was such a big and important part of our life, or our lives, but it's just something so different that so many people just can't really relate. If we were telling some of our friends about it, they're like, sure, you know, it's cool, but okay.
But, yeah, like they had more important things for them in their lives, like loans and how to create the better career and everything, but our mindset was changed.
Yeah.
But they were inspired, and it was so nice to hear that our friend Daniel said that I would like to have this time in my life too, but I can't. It's like, yeah, you know, you see that some people want to have this period of life in their lives, but they are stuck somewhere. They are scared or something like that. So we tried to encourage them and help them to find their own excitement too.
Yeah, because it's just like you said at the beginning, starting something like this is never easy for anyone, I think. For us, we were really scared, but, you know, you have to sort of push past it. So you're scared, but you get yourself together and you still try to do it. You at least try to get out of your comfort zone and, you know, do something new. And I'm sure even if we're going for a longer trip next time, it will still be pretty much the same. You know, you're still worried, you're sad about leaving home, you don't know if you're going to make it or not. And there's always excuses why not to do something like this, but you have to take this time and you have to sort of, I guess, face your fears or get over them and take an adventure.
Caitlin, you made reference to noticing a change in your mindset. Can you talk a little bit more about that, or, you know, sort of more in general? I'm interested in how the trip changed each of you. I'm sure it did. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. At first, I remember my university time. I was quite clear in my mind that I will have some interesting career. I'm gonna organize new big events, which at the end of my bachelor degree, I was organizing TEDx event, and it was like, oh, I would like to have these times again in my life. But the trip made me feel that the nature around us, how important it is, how we should enjoy it more and be thankful for it, and the places, the cultures, the people around us. It's so colorful, and being in one place is good if you have this stable life, but going around and seeing places and people, it's like, you feel that you are growing inside, because after meeting you, Kate and Rodrigo and Lucas, I felt like these 3 days made me a better person, and I got so many thoughts and feelings, and I was so thankful for it. And I know that if I didn't have this opportunity to be there at this moment, I wouldn't be the person I am today. So even little moments were very, very important. And like, you have a chance to explore the world and make your life longer just going on the road, then take this chance, because we have so many memories and we are still talking about them. It's like we have, it's 2020 right now, we have like 3-4 years from that, and it's still so important to us. It's like, oh my God.
Wow. Wow. How about you, Aitz? How did the trip change you?
I think it gave me a lot of confidence, you know, because I was about to start university studies, and I was a little bit nervous about that. Am I going to be okay? Am I able to do this? But I thought to myself that if I was able to, you know, do this trip and be able to deal with everything out there, and basically be homeless for better part of a year, then I think some studies will be a piece of cake, and it's given me a lot of confidence. I think it's really nice.
And material life is not so important to us anymore.
Yes. Also, for me, a big change is that for me, adventure is number one. I need to have adventure in my life.
Well, Aitz, Katlin, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. It's been a real pleasure talking with you, seeing you, because we've got a video connection too. You know, your presence in my life 3 or 4 years ago was also a really special and memorable occasion, and left me with, it changed me as well. So thank you for that. And thank you for being here today. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. It was so nice to see you and hear you.
Yeah.
And I like to say that your podcasts are so cool and people should hear them.
Wonderful.
Yeah, definitely.
Yay. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Next time on Listen, we'll be joined by Sarah Turman. She's a native of Austin, Texas, who's based in Paris and recently sailed across the Atlantic with her partner, Peter. Hope you can join us. The Listen podcast is produced and recorded in Cuenca, Spain, where April showers are definitely anticipating some major May flowers. Check out our archives at thelistenpodcast.com. There are 4 full seasons waiting for you there, all free and easy to access. Lauren Lovett is our producer. Caitlin Fisher handles our social media. And Lydia Munoz Solera writes our blog. Tech support and original music are courtesy of Lucas Munoz Jetmore. I'm Kate Jetmore, and this is Listen.